Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. Well, we were in our last episode. I took a quick note on something and that I thought was a key insight that you made that I think we need to talk about some more and flesh it out a little bit more.
Okay.
Because I know that you've worked with design teams. You've been in a reliability engineering role and supporting with tests and doing a variety of different tasks and then consulting with teams. And I have on occasion done this also, and a lot of occasions. And
right.
The notion you brought up that sparked a thought for me was the technological obsolescence. And remember your article, The Drain in the Bathtub Curve?
There is a drain in the bathtub curve, and that's one of the key issues that I think needs to be thought about when it comes to prediction of intrinsic mechanisms in electronics.
So we talked about that kind of concept of, you know, the long-term stuff. Usually it's not where we should be focusing, especially for a product that has using existing technology pretty much. So, but the impact, I think, of if you're in an industry that is evolving quickly, and many industries have done this, like you mentioned, I think you and your wife have broken so many vendor or blenders, but I don't think that technology is evolving quickly, right?
Right.
It's getting cheaper, right? They're using lesser
electric motors.
They're not cast iron anymore and all that kind of stuff. But if you were doing the early VHS tape players or CD players or the early hard drives or the early flat screens or CRT screens, or when they first come onto the market, there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of design innovation to make them lighter, faster, cheaper, more capable, and so on. But like flat screen TVs, I know we've talked about those a few times, is they were plasma screens for a while, then the LED and the OLEDs have come out, and all these other technologies are coming out.
Yeah, and then we had a technology that disappeared, which was a digital light processing chip, which was millions of mirrors on flipping on a little chip.
So there is competition. Yeah, it's an amazing technology, but it's...
But it disappeared.
It wasn't competitive for a variety of reasons with these other ones. And but for about 10 years, and it varies by industry of how fast these things occur, but like cell phones, you know, the new Apple 10 comes out, or X or whatever they're calling it, and the Galaxy X, whatever number they're up to, comes out, and it's like the market goes, it's got a bigger camera, you know.
They all include a battery.
But what I mean is that when the first phones, the flat screen phones came out, it was, there's a line out the door waiting for the next version of it because it has more memory. It has a longer battery life. It has this capability. It could do this, it could do that. And they're kind of running out of, that's really cool. I got to have that.
Right. Technological innovation in each one of these, it's really has a benefit to the individual user.
Right.
Is reaching a kind of peaking point.
And it matures. Every industry matures. Desktops matured, and now it's just a commodity. I go buy a desktop now.
Right.
Although I have some brand loyalty, so kind of weird that way. But the key point is what does that do to the design team, right? So if they know that in 6 months we're going to release the replacement for this thing, what's the point of making a 20-year product?
Well,
and if that, even if it's not overt, you might say we're going to, like consumer products, they often say we're going to make a 5-year, it's going to last 5 years. But if they know they're already working on its replacement, they're going to technologically obsolesce it in their own roadmap. They're going to go, and the business model is every year you got to buy a new phone, right?
Right.
So do you think that has an impact on the decision making of that design team? of what they pay attention to and what they focus on and how they create a reliable product?
I think it has to do with some components, yes. I mean, they, for instance, they used to in these smartphones put, for some companies like Samsung, and I don't think Apple ever did because it was, it messed up their nice design, physical design, that it was a removable battery. Mm-hmm. So that you could actually, the one device, the one component, one major component that will absolutely wear out within 300 to 500, maybe 600 power charging cycles is a lithium ion battery. Now, if you make it very difficult to change out, that puts the consumer into a position where he says, well, maybe, you know, for $200 to change the battery, and if I pay $500 or $400, I get all these new fancy camera, better improved camera and everything, even though I don't really need it, will push them into buying the new phone because it's so difficult to open phones now, and it requires a factory facility to do it, to open and replace the phones. But I did that on a when Apple, when we covered this in a previous podcast, when Apple announced that one of their software had caused a higher drain or was a concern with customers on a higher drain.
You went and got the new battery, right?
And I got the new battery, and I got a new phone. I mean, I'm not worried about any other components in that device wearing out. And I don't think the engineer said, oh, this device, this component, except for the battery and maybe some switches, it's only going to have 5 years life. Okay, they know the battery is. They everything else in that component, everything else in that phone, all the components, the electronics, solid states with no moving parts, may have 30 years life. We'll never know. We'll never see that. We'll never see these.
They won't connect anymore. They won't connect.
Well, right. There'll be what do you call it?
Gen 75 will come along and our phones won't be compatible for the network.
Exactly. We won't be able to plug it into that. And so my point is that sometimes they do. They put in a battery when it wasn't or a non-consumer replaceable battery.
But it was probably done. It was probably done. I think the industrial design was probably the driving factor, knowing the way Apple designed stuff.
Yeah.
But I suspect that it also was a calculation going, well, if the vast majority of our customers buy a new phone every year, or at least to say 80-90% buy a new one every 2 years, then these phones will only last for 2 years. And for the rare few that go 3, 4, or 5 years, we'll charge them to replace the battery.
Well, the question there, Fred, is are they buying it because the battery's like in the Apple, as the iPhone has always been a sealed battery.
Yeah.
Are they buying this because of that issue I told you about?
I've had lots of batteries or lots of phones, and I've never replaced a battery. And I typically.
Did you have ones that were easily replaceable, like a Samsung?
No. I did have a Samsung, or my first real smartphone.
And you could open up and remove the battery.
Yeah, I could. But I never did. I never bothered with that. The problem I had with my Samsung phone was that I used the head jack or the audio jack. And I was on I used that as the headset because the Bluetooth stuff just wasn't good enough way back when. It was like 3 months ago, it feels like. It was 10 years ago. And the jacks kept failing.
It will. It's a mechanical device.
Yeah.
It plugs in.
And
you have a contact force.
You know, and I'd drop it and it'd pull the plug out and it did all kinds of weird stuff to it. But they replaced the $600 phone. And they did it 3 times under warranty for a plug.
So it happened that quickly within warranty period?
Oh, easy. Yeah. Three, 4 months. I had 3 phones and I said, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm getting an Apple.
Well, this is somebody
who never had that problem with them.
Design engineer that didn't test or cycle test or didn't know, or this could have been the fact that the manufacturer of the actual female socket, female plug, wasn't making it the spring force strong enough to continually, you know, even if you bent the plug, the male portion different ways, it wasn't enough to retain the spring force.
I wasn't curious enough to take apart a $500 phone to find out, right? Because I always sent it back to him to get my new one.
If it's under warranty, you don't bother with it.
No, I just sent it back and get a new phone. And I'd live for a few hours without a phone. They'd FedEx it to me. It was great. It was the next day I'd have a new phone and put the old one in that packaging and ship it back to them. And
so, yeah. So my daughter's iPhone 6, whatever, is going to maybe, I think, you know, I could keep replacing the batteries in it, which I might do, because as you've talked about in the past, the technological innovation of phones is really getting very small.
It's slowing down, you know, but what I've run into with the Apple phone is that some of the apps take advantage of the hardware capabilities of the newer phones, and mm-hmm. they update the software, but then mm-hmm. obsolete its compatibility with the older phones. Right? And so
that was
a nudge there.
Completely unintentional.
No, I'm sure it's not unintentional, but it's one of those you have to, if it's a critical package that you see that they're updating it to new, is it compatible with my phone? If not, right. I don't want to update it, right? I refuse the updates to it until it gets the compatibility. And for the apps I use all the time, I have to pay attention to that. But my main point though, Kirk, is that I know that in working with different designers, they by and large want to make a durable product. They want to make a reliable product. They have different ways of prioritizing reliability, right? Mm-hmm. Different skill sets and capabilities mm-hmm. and experience in doing that. And it varies. Mm-hmm. And that's where we come in to say, all right, here's what we're trying to achieve. Here's the business objective. Here's what's good for the customer. Here's the risks that we're taking. We got to pay mm-hmm. attention to this, and this. Right? If the business model is we need to, it has to survive the warranty period with some percentage. And that's the main driver. Design team and us would pay attention to that, right? But if it's
what would they say? What would they say? This is going to fail within the warranty period if we don't, you know, that's usually a year or less in most products.
For consumer products.
What do they say? This is going to fail in a year if we don't. They didn't know about your plug. Your audio's jack in.
Oh, I don't know if they did or not. I tried telling them three times.
Yeah.
But, that's a whole nother episode about call centers. But the notion is that the designer he's got form industrial design. He's got performance mm-hmm. features.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting up something. I got to make sure it doesn't screw up the antenna. I got to do this and that.
And EMI issues, all kinds of things going on.
So they're paying attention to a lot of different things. If mm-hmm. the inherent reliability of what they're designing and their experiences, it'll last the year.
Right.
Right. It's not as much risk as if you're trying to design the same technology to last 20 years. Right.
Well,
and you see that with companies you've worked with that if they're designing something that's, you know, it's a $20,000 piece of equipment and it really needs to work for 20 years for it to be a value to the customer, they spend more time thinking through the long-term reliability and getting more margin in the parts, getting more durability in the stuff, doing a lot of steps to pay attention to it.
And I can think of one clear industry that's very important to, and that is the energy industry, as photovoltaic, wind turbines. All of those are dependent. Their economic return on investment is dependent on long life. You're going to 20, 25 years out of a solar panel.
Right. We're not going to replace the solar panels in our house every year because I get another half watt of efficiency out of it. No, you got to have it run for 20 years in order for it to pay for itself.
And in these wind turbines that are, you know, if you go across Kansas, there's hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're enormous machines. I mean, gigantic.
Yeah.
And they're going to have gears and bearings and motors and environmental conditions that are going to cause wear. And they are going to have some estimate of and
how often they have to replace those bits.
Well, and this is where what's called prognostics, health management mm-hmm, really mm-hmm. come into play in looking for signatures of wear out, precursors, leading indicators of a decline or wear out of components mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. you know, such as what is it, integrated bipolar transistors, IGBTs, high powered transistors will eventually. And I think Michael Peck of Cal's did a very good study on some characteristics of that you could pick up, parametric characteristics, mm-hmm. that over time you start seeing a decline. And that could give you an early indicator of when, you know, your $1 million wind turbine needs to be maintained, or a subsection needs to be replaced. Mm-hmm. So those are going to be really important. And this is another thing we haven't talked about. The prognostics and health management is another approach, and it's a new approach that uses the same ideas that we do.
I agree. We got to write that one down as another episode, because I don't know that it's new, but we will save that for another episode.
Okay.
But I think he put a fancy name on it. Now they have conferences, but I don't think it's new.
Okay.
Whatever. But right. Idea, though,
oil
is
gauges,
that
you know, oil gauges in our car. Yeah.
That's right.
Now, in fact, I don't know if you have one of these cars that the computer actually calculates and shows you the remaining life in your oil filter. Display my
car
Honda
has an
Pilot
oil filter.
On my Honda Pilot 212, and I'm very curious as to how they're giving me this indication. Now, if it was the back pressure of the oil filter, back pressure of the oil, that would show that the filter's clogging and mm-hmm. it's becoming more
inefficient.
Inefficient, right? So that would be a very good and direct.
But if it's just engine hours, then you know it's
exactly
pretty fictitious.
That's what I worry about. Or it's just counting the odometer, right? It's just saying, okay, you know, we have 3,000 miles for this filter, and I'm just going to count down. That's a different, you know, that's when I say, well, I'm going to push this filter because I know it isn't really having.
But if it was a real, well, we're getting into another topic altogether. Yeah, but it's one of those things that, and I'm more worried about the impact on the design team, because I think if we know that we're doing technology obsolescence, there's less need to make it last a long time. Now, I'm quite sure when we get the iPhone 20, it's going to be a 10-year purchase. I mean, cars went that way, right? They went from a taillight warranty to 3 months to a year, and then it was a Korean company that said, well, we're going to do 10 years, and everybody else had to follow suit. And cars got better. Cars are more durable.
Cars are more durable, but still the technological innovation in cars is still increasing, and that's still motivating people to replace, even though the car operates.
Well,
like
I don't know.
Talked about
do I need bigger
car.
Tires? I don't know.
No, but I do need a rear backing camera.
That's
I do
handy.
Need airbags. Hey. I need one that'll stop if I'm falling asleep and going to run into something that'll stop on itself by itself. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, they are handy.
These are great features. So I'm not so focused on the maintenance cost.
Well, you need to talk to Adam about this. I think he buys old cars just because they're cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous with his boat, his Mercedes Benz, and everything else. I'm driving an old 20-year car. Adam's doing well. That's great.
Well, I don't know. He's on a road trip right now, so hopefully his car is holding out.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know which one he took, the one that works or the one that he likes fixing.
But I would imagine most of it, I've read some of his articles. It's mostly mechanical issues that he deals with in his boat, in his car. And those, by far, it's a whole different world of reliability. Mechanics is a much easier, for me, what my belief is, it's a much easier to understand its degradation over time and be able to measure its degradation over time.
So anyway, I think there's, I mean, we touched on, I don't know, too many topics for one episode, so we have to come back and talk about some of these other ones. I'm going to leave it to our audience. You know, I know we kind of rambled a bit here, but the idea of, and it was sparked in part by our last episode where we were talking about predictions, essentially, and I keep calling it PartsCom predictions, but just this handbook-based prediction type systems. And it has a role. It's not a very good one in any case.
No.
Right,
right.
I don't
want to
get back
that.
In. I don't want to get back okay. into it. I don't want to get into
that.
Right.
Okay.
But the
I just want to speak my opposition to that idea.
But it fills a need that, and I don't think it's, I agree with you, Kirk. It's not the right thing, but it provided feedback to design teams. It kind of given them a fictitious number, in our opinion, but it's given them some feedback. And physics of failure is another approach. Physics of failure tends to ignore or not do a good job of predicting how often my daughter is going to drop it onto concrete, a phone, for example, or early life failures or abuse or
manufacturing
errors,
latent defects. That
yeah,
come
or
out
you get a bad lot of components that
exactly.
gets out.
And then supply chain. Yes, right. That's what I agree. And I think that's a very significant percentage of cause of unreliability in most electronics.
Right. And then you add in this notion that on your article, Kirk, that you wrote a couple of years ago, and we got to make sure we link into it, is the drain
right.
in the bathtub curve.
There's
this
a
idea,
drain.
And for in certain stages of products evolutions, there's a rapid turnover of new technology.
Right.
And that leads, in my mind, to a pressure on the design team to not pay attention to reliability except for the very short-term stuff. And there and it gets into this realm of, well, I don't have to worry about these long-term wear-out things, so reliability is a piece of cake. We got it covered, and they still miss the factory problems, the
well, they can't,
batch
they
problems.
Can't understand where they can't predict a priori.
No,
where...
no, but it's that problem of, oh, we don't have to worry about it wearing out because it only needs to really last a year. So, and then they make the conclusion that, oh, reliability is a piece of cake. We're done. And then miss the early life failures because there's so much emphasis in the reliability literature on the physics of failure and the long-term failure rates and all these exotic mechanisms that take forever to happen. It creates this illusion that they got it covered. And then they're surprised when a third of them fail in the field because the capacitor cracks because they put it next to a hold down or something like that. So I don't know how prevalent that is. I've seen it a number of times, but
yeah.
Let's ask our listeners. Do you see this when you're in the stage if you're in the realm where you're having this technology obsolescence and you're churning out products that get replace your previous one pretty quickly? Do you see a downward pressure on the interest to getting the reliability right? It may be overt. It may be whatever, but. You know, how does that play out in your industry? So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and we'd love to hear what your take on this. It's a bit more esoteric one that I think we didn't do a real good job of explaining, but hopefully we get the point across. So am I getting the article right, Kirk? It's the drain in the bathtub curve?
Yeah, there is a drain in the bathtub curve, and okay. We'll put a link to that so okay. that you can read all about.
I'm still jealous of that article, Kirk, because it's still one of the most read articles on the site.
Well, that's great. I'm glad people are getting something out of it because it's still very true. And in fact, the rate of technological innovation seems to be increasing. You know,
autonomous vehicles even Roombas have changed dramatically since when I bought
two. And I always wonder what those guys that were designing a video cassette recorders said, you know, this was going to be a technology or CD players. I mean, that the world of physical media. CDs, mm-hmm. tapes, things like that is disappearing soon, and rapidly disappearing. I think Redbox is going to have a problem pretty soon because nobody's going to go to a location and grab a CD. There, in fact, everybody's doing it now. Like my mother, she never goes, but she can get every movie she wants directly streaming to her TV. Yeah. So why would anybody? So we see these rapid changes, and you know, in fact, you could make a bet on some of these changes coming to place. So that's why I'm saying, and I would say, you know, when they said it doesn't live as long, would they actually lower? I don't know what they would change. See, because I don't believe, for instance, let's just think about a cell phone. Try and classify or categorize or come up with a quantitative amount of stress and how much different stresses that phone population of a million out there is going to have.
Well, yeah. When I'm thinking about it with the downward pressure on the concern for reliability, I think of it as in a derating sense, or the size of the flanges, or I know that I shouldn't run 3 amps through this part, but it's only got to last a year, so I'll do 2.9 instead. You know, instead of the 1.5 they should design it to. They'll push the edges of stuff, knowing that it'll last a year. It's good enough, or worse, is not even consider it at all. I'm going to pick parts, get it to work once, and ship it.
Right, but we know there's a distribution to that, whatever we come up with, and we know that tail, the short tail, or the tail coming down,
but if you're not
will
worried,
come into your product, and you don't know.
You don't know, but if you're not, is. If you don't, if it's a longer-term product, you care more about that, and you pay attention to and actually get some information or do some testing or do something to understand that tail. Where if there's little emphasis or no emphasis on anything beyond 3 months or a year, I wouldn't even ask that question. It would be, oh, it works. Hey, get it, you know, let's make more. I think that's where the issue is that it gets out of consciousness of paying attention to reliability.
I don't think there's any evidence that shows that you can predict or know or quantify for electronic solid state circuits with no moving parts that you can know what the life is. Yes, there's a lot of theories, there's a lot of models, there's a lot of assumptions, but the technology is so dynamic that whatever model you had for a 30 nanometer line width chip is going to change significantly when it comes to be a 10 nanometer line width, you know?
So
that's going to happen within a couple of years. So whatever your models are, they're not going to be accurate. And
but those
you,
are longer
know
term.
Those. Well,
those are all focused
right,
at, you
right,
know,
right,
10,
right,
15,
you,
20 years. So
right.
If I'm only designing to a year, I don't even think about that stuff. It's like, that doesn't matter.
What are you using design to a year? What method are you saying?
That's the point.
Quantifying this year.
That's the point, Kirk, is that it's, I've already solved reliability because I don't care.
Well, you don't need to care because the life in components is so long.
Right. But then you miss
much longer than 5 years.
Where the main emphasis, and I think that's what you and I agree on, is that it's on get parts from reputable, consistent, process stable vendors, make sure your manufacturing is lined up, all those things. But if the team says, oh, reliability is a piece of cake because we don't need to worry about it, they skip that part because reliability is done.
No, they'll get somebody to do an MTBF prediction, okay?
It's great. It's going to last.
40,000
years.
Yeah, exactly, Fred. You know that.
All right, let's wrap it up there. We got a little long here. All right, Kirk. All right, well, thanks much. And again, I'll just give the link one more time. If you want to chime in on this discussion, let us know what you think.
Is trying to change reliability one podcast at a time.
There you go. There's our new subtitle. It's ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And we'd love to hear from you. So thanks, Kirk. We'll wrap it up there.
Okay. Thank you, Fred. Enjoyed it.
Later. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.